first is Boyd Associates, Jeremiah A. Hunt, the third, Rhiannon M. Jordan, Jeremiah A. Hunt, the fourth, town council, Brian P. Lindsay A. Lewis, that county council.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Jeremiah Denton. I'm here representing the appellant, who's the plaintiff below, Brenda Johnston, who was terminated from her job after zero notice, after having worked for that same employer for 17 years. She sues in tort and in contract solely and purely in reliance on the plain language of six decisions of this court, all employment law decisions, all wrongful discharge decisions, which stated that either party in an employment contract is ordinarily at liberty to terminate a contract at will upon giving reasonable notice of intention to terminate. That is part of the very definition of the employment will doctrine that this court has created. Importantly, Ms. Johnston does not ask the court to create a new exception or any exception to the employment at will doctrine, as was done in Bowman. She simply asks that an existing prerequisite to the right to terminate at will that this court has enunciated on six separate occasions in the wrongful discharge context and on two other occasions in other generic contract context, that be enforced, that it be, if you will, given teeth.
But none of those cases have said that the requirement that you notify the employee of the fact of termination implies a certain period of continued employment of any length. We've never said that, which is your interpretation of it, though, right?
It is my interpretation, and that has never been stated explicitly, Your Honor. However, the language that this court has used is reasonable notice.
So it would be reasonable if you told someone that they're terminated and they understood they were terminated and they knew exactly where their position was with the employer? That's how the federal courts have interpreted it.
It is. It's not how the state trial courts have interpreted it. And the use of the term notice typically in society and in the economy implies some sort of advance notice. Typically it does. You give someone notice, there's a reason for giving notice, and that is so some preparation can be made, not just that an after-the-fact reaction can be taken. That is the common acceptance of the term I submit.
Was it, and this may be the same question, worded differently, none of those cases dealt with a term of notice. While the language may have been there, none of those cases dealt with the term of notice. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct,
and
Your Honor.
As a matter of fact, the cases that Stonega Cole cites, none of them dealt with a term of notice.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Temporal.
That's correct. So we are here before this court essentially saying, Your Honor, what did you mean when you used that term? Now, I would like to say that when the Bowman case was decided, the court, when it was explaining why it created the public policy exception, which is a totally different animal, this court said it did so to temper the harsh application of the termination at will rule. To temper the harsh application.
But isn't the harsh application terminating someone without telling them? And they keep working for you, but you've terminated them because you have absolutely
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't think that it's realistic to think that someone is going to be terminated and they continue to work for a month or two before they find out they've been terminated.
Well,
I think the
did you finish answering his question?
I was going to say, I think the harsh application, Your Honor, is the suddenness of your loss of income. That's the harsh, I think manifestly that was what.
Bowman didn't deal with notice. Bowman dealt with the public policy exception. They were tempering the harsh application of a straight application of employment at will when there was a public policy exception. That was the Bowman ruling, was it not? It
yes.
Didn't deal with notice of
no,
termination.
No, that's correct, Ron. I'm just saying that to give meaning to the reasonable notice term, the only meaning that I can see in it is that it does temper the harsh application of the sudden execution, if you will, of the employment at will right that the employer has and the employee has.
Would this not work a sea change in existing practice?
What do you mean, your existing? You mean in the employment practices?
In the sense of employees feel comfortable just quitting on the spot, just walking out, and employers feel comfortable saying, you're fired, go.
I think the answer is no, Your Honor, because it is traditional that people do give notice.
It's a courtesy, but that's different. It's a courtesy that's commonly afforded to give 2 weeks notice or to give a layoff notice with a specific date, but that's...
I would call it a custom. I think it may not always have been articulated as a mandatory thing, but it is certainly customary both on the side of the employer and on the side of the employee.
Would you agree we'd have to recognize, in this instance it was an employee, but suppose who was terminated, but suppose it was an employee quitting. Would we have to recognize the flip side of that coin, which is a tort by the employer for inadequate notice?
Potentially, yes, Your Honor. And I don't think that that is an onerous burden to impose on employees. They have to give notice in other contexts of life, as when they do or don't renew a lease, they've got to give advance notices. And there are consequences that attend that. And as for the specter of employers turning around and suing employees who say, I quit and walk off the job, I think that would be a very rare occurrence, because the damage to the employer generally, typically, will be minuscule, if anything, when an employee leaves.
No, I'm not sure about that. You have a key man, IP guy, walk out on you. You could have your whole web-based business collapse in a matter of 2 weeks.
And that's why I said generally, Your Honor. There are exceptions.
Going back to your lease example, the lease example is a great example, but I don't know how it helps you, because the lease example, there's a provision that says you got to give 30 days notice. Under your argument, there's no way any lawyer in the state of Virginia would be able to competently advise an employer or an employee of how much notice, because no one knows. Is a week enough? Is 2 weeks enough?
I think the answer to that, Your Honor, is that the law expects individuals to be able to behave like a reasonable person. And an employer is capable of making a reasonable decision as to how much notice should be given. And sometimes the notice might be more or less instantaneous, like in the event of a theft, ongoing theft, and that kind of thing.
Well, then it's for cause. That takes it out of a...
Well, that's true.
Completely out of the fact pattern.
That would take it out. I guess it would.
So, counsel, what if... Okay, so would the reasonable notice be different for somebody who has been employed for 30 days as opposed to 30 years?
I mean, if I was the judge sitting on the court, it certainly would be, Your Honor. But that's not necessarily what the rule would be.
You know, what about, would it be different if the company, based upon some sort of financial setback, had $30,000in its account versus $30 million? Would it be reasonable? Would it be reasonable to give a shorter notice based upon the fact that if you don't terminate various employees, you might have to go into bankruptcy tomorrow?
I think it would be.
So courts in Virginia would be required every single time an employer terminates an employee, or vice versa, every single time an employee decides to quit, to make that reasonable person or reasonable employer determination on a case-by-case-by-case basis ad infinitum?
I think every time a case were brought to the courts, it would, Your Honor. But I think this specter of opening the floodgates to reasonable notice litigation is specious, because generally speaking, we're talking about employees who have been terminated who cannot even afford to hire a lawyer. Lawyers?
They could go into general district court, could they not? And into the small claims division of general district court without a lawyer. My employer just terminated me without notice. I want 2 weeks' pay. Could they not? I mean, is there anything that prohibits them from doing that simply by filing a warrant in debt?
They could go into federal district court and do that without a lawyer. That's true. As a practical matter, they generally don't.
What's the ad danum in this case? May I interrupt you? What's the add down?
My question has been answered. Thank you.
What's the add?
$400,000.
What possibly could correlate $400,000 to giving someone a week's notice?
This particular plaintiff, Your Honor, was approximately my age. She is not really employable at another job. This was her livelihood.
What would a week notice have done with regard to her being your age and not employable? What would a week have done?
She might have been able to negotiate a new job, Your Honor, if she left under good...
You just said she's not employable.
Well, that's in the context of her having just been terminated suddenly for no reason.
But isn't your case the exact reason why we can't adopt your position? Someone fires an at-will employee pursuant to a perfectly legal basis, which is they have no right to the job, and gets sued for $400,000 and has to pay somebody to defend them all the way up to the Virginia Supreme Court. That's not specious. That's actual risk, actual out-of-pocket money that this employer is paying on something that seems logically inconsistent.
Well, my answer to that, Your Honor, is that a person's job and a person's career is extremely important to the person. And that this court has said that there is an employment contract between employer and employee. And this court has said that if you want to terminate somebody at will...
No, we've said there is no contract. That's why you can terminate them at will.
Your Honor, the cases that say that there are contracts are cited in the brief, but they are Humphreys v. Boxley Brothers and Hendrickson v. Meredith. They basically say that in any employment relationship, where there is an employee and there is an employer, there is a contract. It may be verbal, it may be implied, but there is a contract. Those cases do say that, and they have stood since one of them is from the 20s and one's from the 30s.
There is no contract of duration which says I have to give you notice before I let you go.
That's correct. All we have is this court's repeated statement that the employment at will... The right to terminate at will is conditioned upon the giving of reasonable notice. The question is, do those words mean something besides I'm telling you now? I mean, what content do they have if that's all they really mean?
So it means that if you put the notice under their chair or whatever, and it's something they're not going to see, so you've notified them, but not in any way to make it effectual. Isn't that a fair reading of those words?
Your Honor, I don't think so. I don't. I feel that, I mean, I just assume that when the Supreme Court used those terms over and over again, they was thinking of something meaningful. I don't think that the I think that hypothetical is... trying to wedge something into the words, which it's hard for me to imagine was really the kind of thing that was being contemplated when those terms were used. I mean, you give notice so people can make arrangements to do things, arrange their lives. And that's the way.
So they can't be fired during the notice period.
That's correct.
All right, let's think through the logic of that. You got no right to any duration whatsoever, and therefore the law says you can be fired. But if you get fired, having no right to any duration, the law gives you a duration.
Your Honor, that springs from the language of the Supreme Court.
Well, I hope you didn't mean that, because that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, then, okay, Your Honor, maybe it doesn't. Then I can't think of another meaning, which is the reason I brought this suit. Well, unless the court has any questions, I'd like to reserve the remaining minute and a quarter.
Your Honors, may it please the court, my name is Brian Hughes, and I'm here today representing the appellee, Wood & Associates, William E., or William E. Wood & Associates, as it's generally referred to as a business. The question before the court today is whether this court should modify the mutual employment at will doctrine to create a substantive judicial change to require employers and employees to provide advance or prior notice as part of a termination.
I think you've already heard some skepticism from this panel, but the Bowman Court used the term reasonable notice. And every court since then has cited that term. Now, it was dicta, but dicta has meaning as well. What do you suppose it meant, presuming it meant something?
Thank you, Your Honor. First, as an initial matter, Bowman itself involved a termination without notice, where the court explicitly in the opinion, and once again I submit that the facts would be dicta, but did reference and relate in the opinion that it was an immediate termination. As to what it means, Your Honor, and as an initial matter, not every case references this notice or with reasonable notification of the other party. For example, in Sealand Services versus O'Neill and Sartine v. Mauser, this court refers to employment at will, once again in dicta, not reviewing a prior notice requirement, as termination at any time, or in the case of Sealand, termination without further ado.
Well, let's presume that the court has not consciously walked back from the Bowman language. Therefore, my question remains, what did the Bowman court mean?
Your Honor,
I don't know. I wasn't here.
I apologize for that.
I don't know. I wasn't here.
What this court means, we would submit, is that notice, as referenced in a number of cases that have analyzed this issue at the federal level, refers to the manner or the communication of notice, which, respectfully, Your Honors, makes sense that there would be a mechanical requirement of a notification, because otherwise there would be a risk of employees working gratuitously, or in some cases employers paying an employee for not working. And in fact, this is also makes sense because it's the only way to harmonize and reconcile cases from this court that would say use notice language, which is what is relied on by Ms. Johnson in this case, with cases like Sealand and Sartine v. Mauser that say termination of an employee at will can occur without further ado. Moreover, Your Honor, in the Miller v. Sevant case, although once again not a case referencing prior notice, we would submit that language in that case does directly address this issue. In that case, the court held, or the court provided or defined employment at will to include, meaning that a pleading seeking to recover economic damages for termination of a contract for employment, not of a specific duration, and not supported by additional substantial consideration, is demurrable. And respectfully, that is exactly what this case is. There are no claims, and once again, this is in the record in the complaint, for any claims other than failure to give prior notice. And for that, the plaintiff seeks economic damages of $540,000 for each of the two claims, wrongful discharge and breach of contract. And an idea of a prior notice would be inconsistent with the language in Miller v. Sevant, which provides that such a suit seeking to recover economic damages merely as a result of termination is, in fact, demurrable.
Well, can I interrupt you for a second?
Yes, Your Honor.
Prior notice is simply notice prior. When that red light goes off, for example, that's your prior notice that your time's on. But that doesn't suggest we have to tell you at every minute marker, where you are in your red light. So I don't know that you need to back off of prior notice. The fact of notice needs to be given. That's been there since the English common law, right? So the question is whether or not prior notice means prior of some duration.
Your Honor, prior notice, we would agree with that position. And prior notice defined as some prior temporal notice of length of time, Your Honor, is not only inconsistent with this court's precedent, once again, not that there is a specific precedent as to length of notice, but the nature of this court's precedent, both in Miller v. Sevant, where the court recognized a claim there, saying, well, in that case, you had an employee that had a side agreement with her employer, saying, you're employed with us in this position as a teletypist. If you agree to resign that position, we'll hire you for this other position. When she resigned that position, they told her, we're not going to hire you. And in analyzing this issue, and not only in that case, but as referenced by this court and explained in Sartine v. Mauser, in analyzing the claim, what that court based the claim on was not employment at will, but it found it had to find, which it did, a separate side agreement supported by other substantial consideration in order to find a claim. It would not make sense for the court to go through that length of finding this other agreement if the court would simply have said, well, you know, there wasn't prior
notice. Except if you didn't have a, you know, clever lawyer who had made that argument, and then maybe the court would have had to address it. But if it wasn't before the court, I don't know that we could intuit that by silence we answered the question before us today.
We would submit that the issue was not before the court. However, Your Honor, this court also, we would submit, should look at what the prevailing practices of employers and employees are in the Commonwealth, which is that most employers, as evidenced by the amicus brief that was filed in this matter, and employees do not consider saying, I quit, or you're fired, to require some sort of advance notice. As continuing my argument, Your Honors, it would also...
Well, your opposing counsel says that, in fact, is not the practice, that it is common to give 2 weeks for the employee, and the employers commonly extend an analogous courtesy. So how would we know what's correct, what's, you know, without data or whatever? How do we know what is the common practice in the Commonwealth?
It would be just that, Your Honor, a courtesy, absent some specific bargain for contractual provision. Our experience is that in many cases employers do request 2 weeks, and in some cases or some period of time, and they may offer in gratuitously some benefit, for example, a positive recommendation if it's provided, or employees or payout of vacation pay. And employees may provide 2 weeks as a courtesy to employers. However, this is not about whether a courtesy is extended or what would be nice, for lack of a better word. This is whether one party can subject the other party to legal liability. And what is not mentioned in Ms. Johnson's briefing is, and this court has recognized, is the over 100 years of precedent finding that not only is employment at will mutual, but the bedrock behind employment at will, that it is based on mutuality. And, Your Honor, so to require an employee who wishes to leave a job, you know, a job which perhaps may only be available for a set period of time, to have to get prior notice, would essentially allow an employer to subject that employee to a unspecific, judicially created restricted covenant.
Right, and why is the court the proper place to do that?
I'm sorry, I don't know that.
And why would the court be the proper place to impose severance pay, duration, time limitations for all employers across the Commonwealth?
We would submit it is not, Your Honor. These are individual bargain for exchanges, and to submit a judicial requirement of that sort of notice period, which would place an employee, for example, in a holding pattern and unable to accept a job, not only is contrary to freedom of contract principles, it also is contrary to and well-settled principles in this court, but it's also contrary to cases involving restricted covenants in terms of restricting an employee's ability to leave a position that have held that such restrictions are not only disfavored under the law, but will only be applied in very narrow situations when they're explicitly and specifically bargained for. Your Honor, finally, as to this point, to hold a requirement that an employee is entitled to that notice cannot be fired, as this court has pointed out under this argument, during that notice period, that would create a property interest in a position. I own this time. I cannot be terminated. And that, again, would run afoul or contradict directly this court's precedents. In Dugan v. Adams, where the court said that no property interest or guarantee of economic expectancy exists in employment at will. And any future expectancy is just that, an expectancy that may or may not be realized. Your Honor, as to my second point, there is no question, given the number of employees that leave in a position, or employers that have to make decisions to terminate an employee, that this would, in fact, open the floodgates for litigation. This case is an example of that litigation, where there is no other issue before the court that was brought other than whether or not reasonable prior notice was given. And as to the argument, well, a court can figure out, or a jury can figure out, whether or not it was reasonable as a post facto analysis after the termination, because again, no attorney could counsel an employer as to what is reasonable, because it would be, as Ms. Johnson has submitted, would be a jury question. And so even if a court ultimately found it as reasonable, it would be after significant litigation expense had been incurred by the parties to get to that point. Your Honor, such a ruling would also run contrary to sound public policy. There are many examples, unfortunately, in the modern workplace where it is necessary for an employer to separate an individual from the employment site, whether it's a situation of violence in the workplace, a risk, or a situation where an employee that, for example, handles food services is being told they're terminated but is still working with customers' food. IT positions were brought up. Having someone who's being terminated, but because this is not just simply severance, this would be a continued employment obligation, would still have access to customer credit card information after they've been told they've been terminated. And of course, we've already addressed the issue of the public policy of requiring employees to have to essentially negotiate with an employer they wish to leave as to how much time they have to give or be subject to a lawsuit would also be contrary to Virginia public policy.
Well, I don't think this has anything to do with whether they remain on the premises. It has to do with whether you pay them. It's interesting, but it's probably not realistic.
Counsel, you say in your brief that what this court was referring to when it said reasonable notice was the nature of the notice required. So if you were writing an opinion for your position and describing reasonable notice, and what exactly do you mean by the nature of the notice?
The communication of notice. Has it been effectively communicated? An employee who shows up at work and goes to their supervisor and says, you know, I haven't gotten paid the last 2 weeks. You know, everybody got their paychecks. I didn't get mine. And the employer says, well, we terminated you. We just kind of didn't get around to telling you. But you were, in fact, terminated. There's a memo on my desk. That would be unreasonable to somehow suggest that that employee who showed up without being informed of termination, that the employer should be able to withhold payment for that employee. That would be unreasonable. So what it refers to is the communication reasonable so that the party terminating the relationship has sufficiently informed the other party of the termination, which, of course, is not an issue here because as set forth very clearly in Ms. Johnson's complaint in this case, she was called in on a specific date and told she was terminated.
How about this? Notice that effectively communicates the fact of termination.
Your Honor, that we would submit that would be, and that would absolutely be an interpret. That would absolutely be a well-stated explanation of notice. Your Honor, briefly, the final point, the wrongful discharge claim, because, of course, there's breach of contract and wrongful discharge claim. That claim also fails because Bowman and his progeny had made clear that absent allegations of criminal conduct, unless there's a statute at play, there is no wrongful discharge. And for those reasons, Your Honor, we would respect, I see I'm out of time, may I finish my?
Yeah, make it brief.
We would respectfully request that this court affirm the ruling of the Virginia Beach Circuit Court. Thank
All
you,
right, thank you. Mr. Dent.
To the question that Justice McClanahan raised, which is why should this court, as opposed to the legislature, address this question? I submit, Your Honor, the reason is because this court created the employment at will doctrine. The legislature didn't. This court defined it. This court is being asked to explain its own terminology. So it shouldn't be the legislature. Now, the legislature is always at liberty to come in later and truncate any decision this court makes, I believe, except constitutional decisions. This could certainly change what constitutes reasonable notice. It could assign time limits and so forth if it wanted. But I think in the first instance, this is a common law development, and so the decision should be made here. Justice Lemon raised the question of this is really not a land use or a real estate question. It's when do you stop paying? Very good point. Your Honor, if there is a security question or some reason the employer doesn't want the employee back on the property, he can simply do what the municipalities do routinely in a comparable situation, put them on administrative leave with pay for a short period of time and make a resolution.
But in that case, counsel, if there's a security risk, wouldn't the answer be that it is reasonable to terminate them, get them off the premises, and stop paying them all at once?
Depends on what the security risk is. If it was a crime or something like that, but if it was just fear that an employee might break bad, so to speak, then that doesn't necessarily mean that the employee has lost his right to reasonable notice. Just because the employer's got a good reason doesn't mean the employee has done something wrong or that there is a reason to think the employee will. Finally, CBAM
is expired. Thank you very much. Call the next case.
RLDR Enterprises versus Good Shepherd International Miracle Center. W. Berry Creek II, Donovan Hornstein Appellant Council, Clay Albania and Appellate Council.
You may proceed.
Mayor, please approve the honor. I'm Vera McCready. I'm here on behalf of RL&DR Enterprises with my colleague, Don Hornstein, seated at Council Chamber. Council table. Your Honor, the issue before the court is really twofold, but they all arise out of interpretation of a commercial lease for church property in the city of Virginia Beach. The lease was drafted and the court may notice that it is essentially a shopping center lease which was modified by the parties. There are really three provisions that cover the incident at hand, which was a leaky roof there. First, paragraph 4, 10, and then 12B. Paragraph 4 and 12B appear in bold type in a different font and specifically relate to the property at hand. Paragraph